House, please come to order. Members indicate your presence by voting. Madam Clerk?
16 members present.
The House will stand at ease awaiting the arrival of a quorum. House, come back to order. House at ease. Mary, you know the con. Back to order. Madam Clerk?
24 members present.
We do have a quorum to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I would ask unanimous consent that Representative Ramos be excused from the call of the House today.
That excuse, a member was shown as excused. Leading the invocation today is again Chaplain Jesse Keel of the Congregation Sukkot Shalom. Members, please rise for the invocation.
With abiding respect for the religious beliefs of all, we pray. Ata gibor le'olam Adonai, mechaye hakol ata, rav lehoshia. Mechalkel chayim bechesed, mechaye hakol berachamim rabim. Eternal is your might, O God. All life is your gift. Great is your power to save. With love you sustain the living, and with great compassion give life to all. Somech noflim v'rofei cholim, umatir asurim, umakayim emunato lishene afar. You bring freedom to the captive and keep faith with those who sleep in the dust. Mi chamocha ba'al givurot, who is like you, God of might? We pray, O God, that you bless our state and our nation, that they may always be strongholds of justice and its advocate among the nations. And bless, O God, those who serve, that they may do your will with an open heart, doing justly, loving goodness, and pursuing righteousness. Amen.
Amen. Representative Capsner, you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that that wonderful prayer be spread on the journal.
Hearing no objection, then that wonderful prayer is spread across the journal. Mr. Majority.
Mr. Speaker, I need to amend the excused absence for Representative Ramos to 10 a.m. plain time, April 29th.
No objection, then the absence will be amended to April 29th. Plain time in the evening or the morning or a.m. We have any guests for introduction this morning? Representative Olson.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to poach a good friend from a gentleman whose empty desk is to my immediate left, who fortunately is out of town, so I guess I can do it anyway. But in the gallery behind me is Dwayne Bannock. I think most of you people probably know Dwayne. Dwayne spent most of his life in Kenai. He's been up in Anchorage, I think, for the last 3 to 4 years, running DMV. One of Dwayne's many claim to fame are his vanity license plates. Run DMV is Dwayne's pick for his license plates, but please join me in welcoming Dwayne back down to Juneau to testify before State Affairs, I think.
Before we do guests for introduction anymore, let's revert back up the calendar. I missed a spot. Madam Clerk, would you please certify the journal for the previous legislative days?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 108th legislative day.
Majority Leader.
With that, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal of the previous day be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
That objection, then the journal of the previous day will be certified as presented by the Chief Clerk. Now, introduction of guests, Representative Meyer. Well, you didn't have it? I thought you did. Representative Lynn.
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. It's my great pleasure this morning to introduce Miss Molly Williver. She's one of our guest pages this morning. Please stand up back there, Molly. Molly's in Juneau with her father. Many of us know Doug Williver with the administration, and it's Bring Your Child to Work Day. If my kids were here, I'd have six kids and 18 grandkids to bring, so better watch out. Molly is a third grader at O'Malley Elementary School in Anchorage, South Anchorage. She loves downhill skiing, reading, and sleeping with a huge pile of stuffed animals. How about that? That's Molly Walker.
Other guests for introduction, Representative Kapsner, I can hardly guess.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a number of guests in the Paratrovich Gallery who have joined us from Napakiak. Napakiak is a village right downriver from Bethel, and it's often confused with the village across the river, Napaskiak. But if you speak Yupik, the names are very different. Napaskiak is the village across the river, and they're from Napariahak. So they're very different villages, not to be confused with one another. In the gallery behind me, if they'll please stand when I call their names, Casey Bodily is the 7th and 8th grade teacher there. He's originally from Tacoma, Washington, and he's accompanying Alexis Nicholas, who also goes by Banikak, Christina Roland Angilan, her Yupik name is Angilan, Stephen Andrew, let me see if I can get this one. He has a very quiet voice, so I was having a hard time hearing him. Something very hard. And John Bailey, Ayakak. And I also have this morning Conrad Kapsner, whose Yupik name is Thukbuk, and he is my son. Will you please help me welcome them?
Other guests for introduction, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. Since Juno's not here, I'm going to do a little poaching. I've got a good little friend of mine here right behind me in a gallery, Alex Etheridge. And he told me he's 5'3½", 10 years old. He likes to go out boating with his grandpa and his great big 100-foot yacht he's got out here in the harbor. And he likes donuts because he just had three of them up in the finance committee. If you'll please welcome him here.
Did his cell phone go off and he had to buy them too, or was it? Representative Kelly?
Good morning, Mr. Speaker. The gamekeeper is absent, so I intend to poach, and I'd like to ask the following folks to stand. Tom Stewart and Nelda Stewart. And Tom's an accountant with DOT in town, and Nelda is our staffer up in 434, always with a smile on her face, takes a great care of our constituents, and we love her to death. And also over here, I have a young fellow named Nick Stewart. He's a guest page today, and he reports to these two folks when he leaves here. Welcome to Nick, so help me welcome you.
Do we have any other guests? Representative Stoltz.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, in the Paratrovich Gallery, I'd like the members to help me welcome one of my neighbors in Chugiak, actually in Peters Creek, longtime executive director of the Emergency Service Medical Services Council. Please help me welcome Ronnie Sullivan.
Anybody forget anybody? Madam Clerk, are there messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor today.
Are there any messages from the other body?
A message dated April 26 stating the Senate has passed the following. It's transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 48, Hess, by the Senate Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Recommending or Refusing Psychotropic Drugs or Certain Types of Evaluations or Treatments for Children.
Sorry, I'm spacing it out here. The Hess Committee and Judiciary Committee.
There are no further messages from the other body.
Other communications?
There are no communications today.
Other reports of standing committees?
The Labor and Commerce Committee has reviewed the qualifications of Janice Wilson to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and recommends the name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. The report was signed by Representative Anderson, Chair, and Representatives Cott, Ledoux, Roberg, Guttenberg, Crawford, and Lynn. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 29, Health Care Insurance Comprehensive Health Insurance Association recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 29, Labor and Commerce, with the new title, attaches a previous fiscal note recommending Dupass, Foster, and Chenault. No recommendation, Hawker, Holm, Moses, Stoltz, Jewell. The report was signed by Representative Chenault, co-chair. House Bill 29 has no further referral. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 322. Safe Surrender of Babies recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 322, Judiciary, with the same title, attaches a zero fiscal note recommending Dupass, Garacott, Anderson, Grunberg, and McGuire. The report was signed by Representative McGuire, Chair. House Bill 322 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 375, Retirement Benefit Liability Account Permanent Fund, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 375, Finance, with the new title, attaches 2-0 fiscal notes, recommending Dupass, Wyrock, Holm, Kelly, and Foster. No recommendation, Moses and Chenault. Amend Hawker and Jewell. The report was signed by Representative Chenault, co-chair. House Bill 375 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 237, Finance, Additional Judges for Third District, attaches 2 previous fiscal notes and 7 new fiscal notes, recommending Dupass, Hawker, Foster, Jewell. No recommendation, Holm, Kelly, and Chenault. Amend Stoltz. The report was signed by Representative Chenault, co-chair. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 237, Finance, has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered Senate Bill 250, Domestic Violence Sexual Assault Council, recommends it be replaced with House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 250, Finance, pending, or new title, pending a House concurrent resolution, attaches 2 fiscal notes, recommending Dupass, Hawker, Foster, and Wyrock. No recommendation, Holm, Jewell, Moses, Stoltz, Kelly, and Meyer. The report was signed by Representative Meyer, co-chair. Senate Bill 250 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 300, Labor and Commerce, Motor Vehicle Negative Equity Contracts, attaches a previous zero fiscal note, recommending Dupass, Crawford, Lancott, Ledoux, Rokeberg, and Anderson. No recommendation, Guttenberg. The report was signed by Representative Anderson, Chair. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 300, Labor and Commerce, has no further referral. There are no further reports of standing committees, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any reports of special committees?
The Conference Committee considering Committee Substitute for House Bill 365, Finance, amended Budget Reserve Fund Supermajority, failed in Committee Substitute for House Bill 366, Finance, and Senate CS for CS for House Bill 365, Finance, Budget Reserve Fund Supermajority, failed Senate, and Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 366, Finance, respectfully request limited powers of free conference. The specific points will be published in the journal. The report was signed by Representatives Chenault, Chair, Meyer, and Jewell, Senators Wilken, Green, and Hoffman.
In accordance with Rule 42A, the uniform rules, I give limited powers of free conference to the conferees only on the specific items that were in their written request.
There are no further special committee reports.
Are there any resolutions or citations to be introduced?
House Concurrent Resolution 45 by the House Finance Committee, suspending Rules 24C, 35, 41B, and 42E, Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature concerning Senate Bill 250 relating to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
That will be sent to the Rules Committee for placement on the calendar. Representative Wyrock.
Mr. Speaker, I have a guest introduced. We can go back.
Without objection, we'll go back to second, introduction of guests. Representative Wyrock.
Is Jacob Bicknell? There he is. Mr. Speaker, we have a guest page today. His name is Jacob Bicknell, and he's standing over there next to the representative from Fairbanks. And his parents are Spike and Sarah Bicknell. He's 9 years old, and he's at the fourth grade at Auk Bay Elementary School. And he's a hockey, baseball player, and a soccer player. There you are.
He does a good job of looking at that camera, too. Any other guests or introduction while we're here? All right, let's roll back down the calendar to resolutions and citations for introduction. Anything else, Madam Clerk?
House Bill 504 by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor entitled an act relating to the purchase by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation of a parking garage in Anchorage, Alaska, and approving the issuance of bonds for the purchase of that parking garage, providing notice of and authorizing the Commissioner of the Department of Administration to enter into a lease purchase agreement with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation for that parking garage and providing for an effective date. A letter and a fiscal note were attached.
We had officially moved down to bills for introduction, so
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That bill will be referred to the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction.
Okay, that brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the first item on today's agenda?
House Bill 485 by the House Rules Committee by request entitled an act amending the State Personnel Act to place in the exempt service pharmacists and physicians employed in the Department of Health and Social Services or in the Department of Corrections and corporate income tax forensic auditors employed by the Division of the Department of Revenue principally responsible for the collection and enforcement of state taxes who specialize in apportionment analysis and tax shelters of multi-state corporate taxpayers and providing for an effective date. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, attached a zero fiscal note, an indeterminate note, and five fiscal notes, recommending do pass Gatto and Seaton, amend Lynn and Elkins. The report was signed by Representative Seaton, Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, attaches a previous zero and previous fiscal note, and five new indeterminate notes. The report was signed by Representative, or recommending do pass Foster, do not pass Hawker, Curtula, and Moses. No recommendation Holm, Stoltz, Meyer, and Chenault. Amend Wyrock. The report was signed by Representative Meyer and Chenault co-chairs. There's an amendment number one by Representative Croft, beginning page one, line three.
Representative Croft.
Okay, I'm so out of practice, I almost forgot how to do this. I move amendment number one.
There is an objection. Representative Croft.
Yeah, got to do more in these last couple of weeks on this. Amendment number one removes the second section of this bill. This bill puts two categories of employees into exempt service. That is the politically charged, at-will, removable at the pleasure of the executive, a lot less protections area of state service. Pharmacists, and the main justification there is that we can't get good pharmacists because we're not paying them enough. And this amendment concerns the second category, which is corporate income tax auditors. And really, we'll see two different amendments because this bill puts two very different categories of employees with two different, very, very different justifications. This amendment deletes that second category that says don't put the auditors into the politically charged exempt category. And my reason for doing that, my reason for opposing this portion of the bill and thinking they're better off where they are, is we don't want those auditors who are doing very sensitive audits of very big and powerful, politically powerful corporations to be susceptible to political influence. They're better off right where they are with all those protections. I want an auditor to give me the true financial information without any fear of repercussion to them. I want them to be insulated from the kind of public pressure that can come if a very large corporation, and in Alaska it's most likely to be an oil and gas corporation, says to an executive, get that auditor off my back. Do something about that. I'm tired of this. I want there to be the very wall we have now that even if an executive wanted to, they'd have to say, can't do anything about that. That's a protected position. They're doing their job. And there's no way, even if I wanted to, that I could exert that kind of influence. We'll see later a different discussion, different rationale, but for this one, it's simply a policy call. Do you want these auditors to be protected or relatively unprotected? Do you want them to be subject to the political process or relatively insulated from it? And I hope this body will agree with me, Mr. Speaker, that we would like these auditors to give us the real information and to do so without any fear of losing their job. You know, for a long time, that was purely a theoretical fear. When we've had those discussions, it's been, in theory, are you worried about somebody having enough pressure that they have to quit or get fired from their job for presenting what they think are the facts to us, to the governor? But we had an experience last year where it became very real for most of us. We want these... Commissioner Irwin was in an exempt position. Probably should be. Commissioners probably should be in the exempt position. But do we want to throw this whole other category of people who are auditing and protecting us, often to the tune of billions of dollars, by saying, here are the facts, they're not as represented, we're not getting enough money, here's the case. I want them protected, and I hope this body agrees.
Senator DeBate. Senator Rokeberg.
Well, Mr. Speaker, one of the problems about that we're having here in the state right now is that we don't have any auditors that are going to be finding themselves in a politically charged area. That is the issue before us. The Department of Revenue is finding it extraordinarily difficult to hire anybody, and that's the rationale behind this bill. Clearly, the last auditor that had one of the positions, there's three positions authorized. There's only two left in the entire state doing this right now. The last person that had one of these positions is being paid $75,000 a year and left the job position for better compensation and other employment outside of state government. That is the issue here. And what the member from Spinard is talking about is a situation about a turf war that may be developing here about who's to have control. I don't believe it's at all about the ethical conduct of the supervisors and the employees within the department doing their job. I believe the job descriptions and the requirements of the job and the supervision of that job are adequate. There are other safeguards within our codes of ethics and within our whistleblower statutes to provide for performance of those positions. So I am somewhat bewildered by this area of political influencing on doing jobs that need to be done. As a matter of fact, the member is correct when he says that the responsibilities of the audit work are quite large. Matter of fact, because we're down to two auditors now, the responsibilities exceed $250 million per auditor. We cannot go on like this, Mr. Speaker, particularly if we are to change our petroleum tax regime and require further auditing. We need the personnel to bring on board, to get on board, to be able to do this job. So I would ask that we defeat this amendment, Mr. Speaker.
Other debate. Representative Kapsner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for the Rules Chairman. Why is it that this position needs to be exempt? Why are we not instead looking at a higher pay range than for auditors?
Other debate? Representative Cessna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think it's critical that we get an answer to that question. I think that's one of my real questions here as well. Why is it a problem? Because we certainly in this body, I think, understand the market, and you pay for what you get, and you get what you pay for. I'd like to have that the question of the former speaker answered. Thank you.
Other debate? Jim Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just talking from personal experience again, I grew up in a state where it's well known for corruption. One of the reasons why it was corrupt was because that everybody for many years that was hired in state government was hired at the pleasure of the governor. They didn't have exempt and non-exempt positions. Everybody was at the pleasure. There's a good reason why you insulate employees from political influence. And my home state, former home state, was a very good example of that. So I think that we are focusing on the wrong thing here. What we need to focus on is raising the pay range. If you can't get qualified people at the pay ranges, then let's change the pay ranges, not take away the ability to insulate them from the executive.
Brief it easy.
House come back to order. Okay, Representative Roakberg.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'll take the second question first. That is to say that I'm glad that we don't have to compare our state to Louisiana. And we do have an honorable workforce in this state with very little political corruption. I'm happy to say. Mr. Speaker, I'm no expert in employment law, although I've had to, as the Rules Chairman, look at their human resources issues for the last 4 years for this body. But I do know that primary reason for asking for the creation of the exempt status for these employees is that this would raise a number of other people up if they were raised up in the 29 to range 30 areas and have an impact across the board. Therefore, in order to be able to recruit these highly specialized people, these professionals, that they will be, they're asking for a very common sense change to make these people exempt. That makes a good deal of sense. Now, as to the issue regarding the potential for the politically charged area and having undue influence provided or created by supervisory personnel or political superiors, it is to say that really the only real truly at-will people in the state employment are commissioners and perhaps the staffers that work for us. But with that, anybody employed, even under an exempt status, has the protections of industry standards and employment law that would protect them. If they're not under the personnel rules of that apply to non-exempt people, they do have protections. And therefore, I think that, as I mentioned previously, are adequately protected, and they're doing the right thing that would be required by their own internal codes of ethics within their professions and providing the service to the state. So, Mr. Speaker, I would ask that we defeat this amendment.
Other debate. Representative Capser.
Mr. Speaker, in that response, I did not hear an answer to why we cannot raise the salary for the classified employee rather than exempting the position out. And the other thing I should mention as well is that the unions have been in negotiations for getting the pay scale higher for the classified staff without having them become exempt. And I was wondering why we just didn't continue on with those negotiations before this bill was introduced.
Clear debate? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've heard a lot of testimony actually over the past 2 years about problems across the state with hiring people in a wide variety of job categories. And we know that's true in forestry. We know it's true for biologists. We know it's true for accountants and pharmacists and nurses, and certain types of teachers and computer specialists and all kinds of categories. So we have a broader systemic problem than just these two classifications. And I think that it's a mistake for us to piecemeal address this little problem and this little problem when really what we need to do is look at the entire package and address it systemically. So I'm opposed to this bill. Thank you.
We're speaking on the amendment or the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I support the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Curtula.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Just as something that's been said previously, I used to be in the exempt service at Department of Law,
And unfortunately, not only there, but in other exempt positions, I have seen political pressure. And it's something that, especially with these auditors, that we do not want to see. It is a bad idea to put them in exempt service. This should be done in an overall program, and I support the amendment. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, this isn't the first time the request like this has been made. And I think in certain of these categories where the state finds itself in a difficult competitive position for one or more positions within a general ranking of employees where they are not having that same competitive pressure, that this is an appropriate, lawful way to make the request and to solve the problem, allow the recruitment to go on, to take place. And it is... It offers less flexibility than an approach that tries to accommodate this within a bargaining unit range that would affect other employees. So I think this is a very simple request from the administration in an attempt to fill these positions. These are highly qualified professional positions, and I think that the argument about their security is not the issue. I don't think it's... You know, we had a good presentation in finance from retirement and benefits who support this request as well. So I think it's an appropriate place for the bargaining unit to take their bite at the apple at the table. And this is a request that I think makes good sense. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I speak against the amendment.
Other debate? Representative Croft, in wrap-up.
Yes, so thank you, Mr. Speaker, in wrap-up. Well, that's the exact wrong reason to put somebody in the exempt category. I mean, there are some good reasons, but the reason we created this entire distinction is to avoid the problems that Louisiana faced. Indeed, we had, not too long ago, members of the Constitutional Convention, and they had a long discussion about how to avoid the problems that they saw in other state governments, how to provide this layer of protection. They knew that there were some category of employees where it was fair to say that they had to serve at the pleasure of the executive. They wanted a strong executive who could pick their cabinet, say. But they also wanted, in the main, in general, broad category of protected employees, classified, it became called in the Constitutional Convention, because you wanted to avoid this wholesale sweep out of all of the qualified people in state government. And that's what happens when you grow and grow the exempt category. You get people who solely come in and then leave at the whim of which party got in. You lose all your qualified people. You ought to make the determination on who's in the exempt and who's in the qualified based on, do you think that category of employee should be under or not under political influence? Should they come in and out with administrations, or should they be qualified and protected in the service? You shouldn't make it. It's the exact wrong reason to make it, is to say, well, we're having trouble finding them. We're not paying them enough. Or we didn't give them a good retirement. Those you should solve through the ordinary process. We've got this whole thing backwards, I'm afraid, and are having a justification. Because where does it end? If that's the rationale, we can't find them, or they're not being paid enough, or they don't like the new pension plan, and so everybody goes exempt? Each time we get a category that we have some difficulty finding, or we're not paying them enough, they go into the exempt category? Is that the public policy statement we want to make? Is that the conclusion we want to reach here? I had not expected, frankly, that rationale. I thought the next amendment and the next category of employees we're going to talk about was the main focus was going to be on not paying them enough. This is our policy call. We should tell the administration, we will help you solve the fact that we don't pay enough to get good auditors, but we will not use this club to do it. We're not going to warp our entire constitutional structure of how we define these to the state's long-term detriment. We're not going to put these category of employees under that political pressure. Because there's politics everywhere. The question is not whether there's going to be political pressure on these guys. It's what is going to be their protection should it come. We ought to have them secure that their job, if they're doing it well, is protected. The exempt category wasn't created just as a way to increase people's salary. It was put there as the place where you say, these are the employees that we think should only serve at the pleasure of the executive, and even if it's not a good reason for firing them, that's okay because we want them to have, the executive to have their people in. That's not this category. Auditors clearly don't fit in this category. Don't sort of warp the whole system for one imminently solvable fiscal problem.
Other debate? Brief at ease. Now let's come back to order.
House.
There's a call placed on the House. While we're waiting for the call to be satisfied, Representative Crofton, wrap-up of the wrap-up.
For the record, you asked me to do this, Mr. Speaker, so I'm not just speaking on. It's an odd thing to ask, Mr. Speaker, because I'm sort of making the other side's argument, but the idea is that the problem with having extra categories, extra pay scales, is other categories of employees. Other employees might migrate into them. Well, if we have groups of employees who are not being paid enough, who we cannot attract the skilled people we need in two different areas here, we'll get later to pharmacists, but in pharmacists and auditors, and where it's been conceded, I guess, by all sides that we need more pay to attract the kind of people we want, then I guess I don't see the problem with adding those pay scales. And if there are other categories of employees where we have the same problems, if next year's bill brings up some other category of person where we can't hire, we need to be competitive, then those two should migrate into it. The problem as described to me was, well, there may, the way we've categorized auditors in with others, they may automatically jump up. But it was the subject of ongoing negotiations to let just these two come in. That is, the unions were negotiating to solve that problem as we speak. We have the wrong solution to a legitimate, solvable problem here. We shouldn't start to mess with, undermine, the entire distinction we have, a very good distinction between exempt and non-exempt employees, based on what we think their duties are and how susceptible they should be to influence from the executive. That's the line you always ought to ask on this, not are they being paid enough. Paid enough is a negotiation issue. Susceptible to political influence is our discussion on where we want them to fall in the categories.
Representative Roberg, and your wrap-up.
Mr. Speaker, I beg your indulgence in the rules to rise a second because of the nature of the debate. But I believe the member Spinard correctly points out that one of the issues here is that under the classification systems, this would, if we reclassify these particular three positions, it creates new higher super categories that could create other positions moving into there or migrating into those positions. So the unintended consequence of accepting this amendment would be to create high ranges which could create higher payrolls throughout the departments. And that's one of the other, that's to be avoided, I think. And just to say that they're in negotiations with the unions for these three positions, I don't think really truly characterizes it because of the raising job levels and the creation of these ranges under the current laws, as I understand it. And but I think what the ultimate result will be that if we accept this amendment, this will force the administration into contracting for these employees, and we will not be building a staff and a cadre of people in this very highly sensitive area that we can depend on as trusted employees of the state.
Any other debate? House will stand at ease awaiting the arrival of the other members to fulfill the call. House, come back to order.
I believe it's set.
House, come back to order. Leave the call having been satisfied. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
19 yeas, 20 nays.
So the vote of 19 yeas and 20 nays, amendment number one has failed to pass the House. Madam Clerk, do you have any other amendments?
It's amendment number two by Representative Croft. Delete page 1 through 2, all material.
Representative Croft.
Thank you. I move amendment number two.
There is an objection. Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Much of the discussion we had before applies to deleting that section 2. This would, in addition, delete the pharmacist provision, and the main difference being it adds intent language for us telling the administration to negotiate this. As we discussed on amendment number one, I think there's real dangers in having these auditors under political pressure. Frankly, I don't think the pharmacists, it's dangerous so much as just still a bad idea. I don't know quite what political pressure pharmacists would come under, maybe to get generic drugs or maybe some things like that. But I think more it's just this practice of if we have a problem, which we apparently do in these two categories, we're not paying them enough, we've chosen the wrong solution. And the right solution should be that we instruct the administration to negotiate for narrow range increases for these categories of employees where we're having the difficulty. So there's some overlap with amendment number one, but it's different and it adds that both categories of employees and that intent direction to the administration on what they should do.
You ready for the question? President Robert.
Mr. Chairman, I'll wait if there's any other debate.
Any other debate? President Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, there were some points made on the previous amendment that I think need to be expanded on in this one. And that in my experience, I have seen pressures put on a variety of positions within the state, exempt positions, biologists. I've had a few, not one, not two, but a few, that I guess that would be three, come to me with stories about political pressure on biological results, research, studies, coming up with an answer that needed to be supported by people above them, and they left. They went to work for the feds. They get paid more. They don't have the pressure. They get a COLA. They work less hours. They have considerable pay increases. So when we're talking about auditors, pharmacists, what's next? How far down the line are we going to go? When we start losing biologists to the federal government or other places because the pay is better and we can't attract and retain them, these are the higher level, long history of public service, doing research in the field, and we start losing them, we're not going to be able to hire people who have years of service because they're all already going to be gone and they're not going to come back. And they're probably vested. They've probably taken their retirement and gone. So what's next? We need to consider what this is and what we're doing here as far as employees and attracting and retaining and keeping them. And if we're not doing the things we need to do to get them here, then we need to consider strongly amendment number two and to have them in our service to do the state's business. Protected. The ability to do things without influence from above, to come up with real results, to do the science and the research and the audits that we need to do real work with real answers. So I'm advised in support of amendment number two.
The debate. You ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number two, our representative system.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm not on any of the committees that this came to. It's not an area that I've spent, say, the first 2 years I was in this body, much time with. However, the thing that deeply disturbs me in the conversation that we're in right now is really a conversation about how we value the people who work for us, the people who directly do the job of administering the policy that we develop. And what I know, having come all of my adult life until I started serving here out of private sector, is the people that do the work for me, if it's in my publication business, if it was in my counseling work, in the different things that I saw on a continual basis in the private sector how I valued and how I treated the people who did that work was directly related to the quality, the outcomes of that work. And exempt by itself says that people are being removed from some of the quality assurances that are built in to the employment structure here in state government. This is government, this is not the private sector. But that doesn't mean that basic workforce principles don't apply here. And quality, or the lack of quality, is what either gets you the outcomes you want or you fail in those outcomes. And as long as this body does not look at the quality and the environment that we create for the workers, we're not going to get the outcomes that we're constantly, I hope, as a body working towards. I support this amendment. I think we need to do more. But I think the workers of this state are number one in terms of getting the job done that I'm trying to get to. Thank you.
Have a debate. Representative Robert.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm rather surprised to hear the comments of the last speaker, particularly as it relates to what a portion of this bill does. It speaks to providing health care services to those people who are most distressed in the state. This amendment, Mr. Speaker, if you look at it, it's one of the most extraordinary amendments I've ever seen in my 12-year career here. It just deletes the whole bill, then slaps some intent language back in it. It's rather insulting, as a matter of fact. But Mr. Speaker, what we're doing here with this amendment is removing from the category of reclassification and exempt positions 10 pharmacists. Those are three pharmacists that handle all six Pioneer homes, two at the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, two in the Medicaid sections, and one in epidemiology, plus two in corrections. These people are currently in ranges 21 to 22. These pay hourly wages from about $31 to $33 an hour. To be able to recruit people right now, these departments need to go to $42 to $58 per hour. As many of these positions are in the consulting pharmaceutical area, they're highly skilled, experienced people. They're there to serve the people that can't help themselves, and we don't have these people to do that, to deliver the medical services that they need today. Please vote no.
You ready for the question? The question is, so amendment number two passed the House. Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
17 yeas, 22 nays.
So with a vote of 17 yeas and 22 nays, amendment number two has failed to pass the House.
Please.
House, come back to order. Just a standard what happened? All right, Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 485 be considered engrossed and advance to third reading and object.
Mr. Majority Leader, 485.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Was that stern enough? All right. Then, Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 485 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is an objection. This bill will be heard in third reading in tomorrow's calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
Representative Elkin. You want to revert up the calendar and introduction of guests?
Yes, sir.
Representative Elkin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce in the Pratovich Gallery the man who protects my home day and night and is a good friend. He's the fire, David Hall. He's the fire chief for North Tongass Fire Department, one of the reasons I fight so hard for public safety in general. I present to you David Hall. And the other two young ladies in the gallery that in the Pratovich Gallery are Jennifer Baxter, my aide, and her sister Ellie, who is here learning how we run the government because she plans on being here helping us one of these days. And I had her up in the governor's, when I met with the governor this morning taking notes, so I introduced Jennifer Baxter and her sister Ellie.
Okay, Madam Clerk, can you please read the next item on the day? We'll move back. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wyrock, still in our introduction of guests?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery is the guest page's father. The guest page is Nick Stewart. It's Tom Stewart in the back, and his spouse works for the representative from Fairbanks back here. Her name is Nelda, but this is Tom Stewart.
Tom, you're so important, you get introduced two or three times. It's okay. Any other guests for introduction? Okay, let's revert back down the calendar to the calendar. And Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
Committee substitute for House Bill 325 Finance entitled An Act Relating to Post-Conviction DNA Testing and Amending Rule 35-1 Alaska Rules of Criminal Procedure Amendment Number 3 is moved and pending.
Representative Gatto, you want to talk about Amendment Number 3?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker. In conversation with the sponsor of the bill, you'll note that it never did get heard in rules where these amendments could have been offered. But in an attempt to diminish the amount of debate on the floor, I've agreed with the sponsor that since she agrees with Amendments 2 and 3, she will offer them in the other body if the bill reaches the other body. And that doesn't account for Amendment Number 4, which I've already agreed to.
It's been withdrawn. We have Amendment Number 4. Brief it is. Representative Gatto has retracted his idea, and now he's going to re-offer Amendment Number 3. Is that correct, Representative Gatto?
That's correct, Mr. Speaker.
You want to move Amendment Number 3, then?
I move Amendment Number 3.
New Amendment Number 3, yeah.
Correct, new.
Okay, we have it back. Is there an objection? I hear an objection. Representative Gatto.
There is an objection, then I'll say...
I heard it,
I
so kind you can
of
talk about it.
Refer to it as the tree trunk amendment in that the state is required to maintain evidence for the entire time that a person is incarcerated. That means if you have a life sentence, they will keep the actual objects for the remainder of your life, which could be 50 years. If indeed a tree trunk or a freezer or a door of a car or any monstrous object was part of the evidence in the crime, then we're going to have to store it. I've asked the state what that costs. It's a lot of money. And so we have the part, and I don't have the amendment in front of me at this point, but it deals with, thank you, is reasonable under standards established by the department and regulation. And the key words are is reasonable. And that leaves it up to the state to say, listen, there are some things, a whale carcass, we don't want to store. We think maybe that's going overboard. And that essentially is the effect of the amendment. Thank you.
Hey, is the objection maintained? No objection, or there is an objection? Okay. Ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 3 pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
33 yeas, 6 nays.
And so, with a vote of 33 yeas and 6 nays, Amendment Number 3 has passed the House. Madam Clerk, do you have any other amendments?
Amendment Number 4.
Representative McGuire, brief it. Back to order.
Oh,
fallen from.
Okay, Madam Clerk, do you have any other amendments?
Amendment number 4 by Representative Gatto to page 2, line 30 through page 3, line 1.
Representative Gatto.
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw the amendment.
Madam Clerk, do you have any other amendments?
Amendment number 5 by Representative Stoltz to page 2, lines 30 through page 3, line 1.
Representative Stoltz.
Speaker, I ask you now to set a body, but I not offer that. I guess I haven't moved it, so I don't offer it.
Amendment number 5 is not offered. Madam Clerk, do you have any other amendments?
And McGuire.
Representative Stoltz. Representative McGuire.
Mr. Speaker, I ask that I be allowed to withdraw this amendment.
Amendment number 6 is not being offered at this time. Representative Cott, you have an introduction to guests you want to do back there?
Mr. Speaker, I guess since I've been put on the spot, I ask that we return to up the calendar to introduction to guests.
Briefly, we'll roll back up the calendar.
Mr. Speaker, in the gallery behind me, because it is Take Your Kid to Work Day, I invited my daughter to join me here in the gallery. I think this is the second time she's been down to Juneau. She comes down periodically to push her products on the various positions here in town. As she works for Wyeth as a sales rep, drug sales rep. Please help me welcome my daughter to Juneau, Pamela.
Any other guests? Any other guests while we're here? If not, we'll roll back down the calendar. And, Madam Clerk, do you have any other amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Well, Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to committee substitute House Bill 325, Finance amended, be considered gross advance to third reading and placed on final passage.
There's an objection. This bill will be heard on third reading tomorrow's calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 207, Finance, by the Senate Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Membership on the Board of Directors of the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill attached to a previous zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Crawford, Lynn, Ledoux, and Rokeberg. No recommendation, Guttenberg. The report was signed by Representative Rokeberg, Acting Chair. I have no amendments, Mr. Speaker.
Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent as committee substitute for Senate Bill 207, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's an objection. This bill will be heard in tomorrow's calendar and third reading as well. Madam Clerk, please read the next item on today's agenda.
Senate Bill 308 by the Senate Transportation Committee, entitled An Act Authorizing the Alaska Railroad Corporation to issue revenue bonds to finance rail transportation projects that qualify for federal financial participation and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered the bill attached to a previous zero fiscal note, recommending due pass Hawker, Holm, Foster, and Meyer. No recommendation, Wyrock, Moses, Stoltz, Kurtula, Jewell, and Chenault. The report was signed by Representatives Meyer and Chenault, co-chairs. I have no amendments.
Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to Senate Bill 308 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There's an objection. This bill will be heard in third reading as well tomorrow. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next item on today's agenda?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 298, Judiciary, entitled An Act Relating to Loans from Trust Property, relating to a trustee's power to appoint the principal of a trust to another trust, relating to challenges to claims against and liabilities of trustees, beneficiaries, and creditors of trusts and of trusts and estates, relating to individual retirement accounts and plans, relating to certain trusts in divorce and dissolutions of marriage situations, and providing for an effective date. The bill's in third reading.
Ready for the question? The question is, shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 298 pass the House? Members, please vote. Thank you. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
34 yeas, 1 nay.
And so the vote of 34 yeas and 1 nay. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 298 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the roll call vote on the passage of House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 298 Judiciary be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Objection, roll call vote on the bill will be the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader. Mr. Minority Leader, I'm sorry.
Well, I took a shot at it today, and I think I did just fine with my audition.
You made the minority leader unhappy. I saw the look.
I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on SB 298.
298 on the same day? No. Oh.
Senate bill, Mr. Speaker.
Reconsideration has been asked for on Senate Bill 298. Are there any citations?
There are no citations on today's calendar.
About down to unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Just before you do that, I would move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Berkowitz be excused from the call of the House for the remainder of the day. Yeah, the session if wanted, but at least for the call of the House. I think he has a speaking appointment.
Okay. No objection, then we'll excuse him. Under unfinished business, House Bill 322, called Safe Surrender of Babies. As we see the fiscal note, so it'll get the finance. Briefly. Order. After consultation with the Judiciary Chair, I understand that the fiscal note has been taken off of that, so it won't get the finance referral. Okay, Mr. Majority Leader, anything else under unfinished business?
Yes, we do, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the members go into the limbo file, that we may consider committee substitute for House Bill 243, Finance.
243, without objection. We have 243 in front of us.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent. That the House concur with the Senate amendments to committee substitute for House Bill 243, Finance, thus adopting the Senate committee substitute for... I'm sorry, probably before I make the motion, I ought to suggest that a member from District 7 speak to it, and then I'll go ahead and make the motions, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kelly, you want to speak to the changes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I'll be brief. House Bill 243 went over to the other body as a simple extension of the date by which the four-dam pool was required to get an approved plan of finance demonstrating sufficient funds to complete the Southeast Intertie, and this body approved extending that date from April 05 to April 06. In the other body, there was a change made as a result of the Four Dam Pool and Ada actually entering into an escrow agreement to handle that $5 million, and it makes sense. It's agreeable to both parties, and I would urge concurrence. I'll stop there. If you need more, I can go into detail, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House concur with the Senate amendments to committee substitute for House Bill 243, Finance, thus adopting the Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 243, Finance, and recommend that the members vote yes.
You ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur with the Senate changes, thus adopting the Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 243? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
36 yeas, 0 nays.
And so, with a vote of 36 yeas and 0 nays, the House has concurred in the Senate changes, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 243, Mr. Majority Leader.
I'm one of them.
Majority Leader.
Yes.
It's tongue tied.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the roll call vote on the passage of Senate Committee Substitute. For the roll call adopting the committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 243 Finance, we consider the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Got objection, then the roll call vote on the bill on the concurrence will be the roll call vote on the effective date clause. Mr. Majority Leader, any other items under unfinished business?
No, sir.
Are there any committee announcements? Representative Samuels,
thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Resources Committee is canceled today.
Holy smokes, Resources is canceled. Any other committee announcements? Representative Salmon? Oh, you didn't have them. Okay. Any other committee announcements? Any other announcements? Health caucus is over for the year. Any special orders? Special orders, Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like permission to speak on keeping legislators in the dark.
Uh-oh. Keeping legislators in the dark. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I distributed earlier today a chart provided by the Department of Revenue on the amount of profits oil companies are on pace to make under the various PPT proposals that we're considering from taxes anywhere from 20 to 30%. A few folks made the fair point that this earlier chart that the Department of Revenue provided that shows even at a 30% tax rate at current prices, oil companies are on pace to take about $6 billion in pure profit off the North Slope and even more under a 20 and 22% plan, that this should be updated for the various changes in deductions and credits and other things that happened during the committee process over the past month. So a number of people have asked the Department of Revenue to do that. And in my experience, the administration has been quite quick at providing information, I think, that that they wish to provide, but quite slow in providing information that maybe isn't all that helpful to the administration's case. So, Mr. Speaker, I think it would be quite useful for us to know what kind of profit margins we are leaving companies with under the various PPT proposals that have been developed over the last month. That information has been requested from the administration. What we know is under the prior version of deductions, oil company profits under the governor's proposal will exceed $6 billion, something very close to what they are under current law at $60 a barrel. And the question is whether we need to leave that much money on the table when we're considering what the fair share for the state is, Mr. Speaker. I've asked the administration today again to get the updated information to us so that we can consider it in time for us to have a legitimate and fair debate. Some of the information I've received is that we might not get the information until sometime next week, Mr. Speaker. And I think it's quite inappropriate for us to not be provided with information that is crucial to our discussion of this oil tax issue until after the debate is over. So, Mr. Speaker, I hope that others will maybe join in the chorus, and I ask the administration to provide us some very elemental information, which is under the bills that have passed the committees and the other House, what kind of profit margins are we leaving the oil companies with? How much in profit? Is it still in the $6 billion range? Are the profit margins still in the 40% range? Or have they changed materially in the various versions of the bill? Because at the end of the day, we have to decide what a fair share is for those who produce the oil that we sell and for us. And, Mr. Speaker, I think that is one of the many very important elements that we need to look at if we're going to have a fair and informed debate on the most important issue that we're facing this session.
Any other special orders? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Smiles.
What?
Smiles.
Smiles. Lots of them.
Yeah.
No objection.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk for a moment on Smiles. It's been 31 years since Tina and myself have been married as of today. And anyway, so it's been a long time.
She's a saint.
Still smiling. And she still puts up with me. Thank you.
Any other special orders? Representative Roper.
Getting the facts straight.
Oh, about me? No objection. Getting the facts straight.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the aid that the member from downtown Anchorage is trying to give us with the spreadsheet, but you know every statistic can be presented in different ways. So I would suggest if we're going to have these types of things that they at least show the current system and actually show some history of what's happened in the past. I think that's would be put things in perspective. These are raw numbers in a certain sense, and I'm kind of curious about even how these numbers are determined, because I thought they were basically proprietary information. Also, I would I do appreciate the fact that we received the business press release from ExxonMobil today when they announced their very large profits. But as is noted in the press release, the Wall Street was so underwhelmed that the stock went down.
Yeah, Special Order, Judge Gruber.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to speak on the release of the contract.
Release of the contract. Objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A number of people have asked that the contract be released, and the governor has said that he's going to do so on the 10th, presumably after both bodies have had a chance to consider the petroleum production tax legislation. This is troubling to me that we're not getting this until then. A 300-page contract is a lot of reading, and it's dry. There's not much of a plot cast of millions, and it affects all of us. But to not have that in front of us when we're voting on the tax, even if it's incomplete, and it will be incomplete, there'll be some holes in it, but at least we'll be able to see what there's there. And that is going to be very helpful. That would be very helpful. I don't see any harm in doing that, because it would make us more informed in our votes, better legislators, and it would make the public more informed, too. It would also remove the shroud of secrecy. And when government operates in the sunshine, we're all better off. When business operates in the sunshine, it's generally better off, too, because when people don't know, they assume the worst. They're more suspicious, they're less trusting, and they're more critical. And if the public confidence is to be obtained and retained, we should have this information. The public should have that information. And I would urge the administration to reconsider its decision and let us have what there is now. The argument that we can't handle the truth, that we can't handle and will become confused by seeing it now, underestimates our intelligence. We're intelligent, we're concerned, we care, and if we don't understand something, we are trained to ask proper questions. So when people say we can't look at it now, we'll become confused, that's saying the Alaska public can't handle it now, that they'll become confused. And my constituents and yours, Mr. Speaker, and other Alaskans are too smart for that. We can handle the knowledge. And I'd ask that they reconsider that. I'm saying this in the spirit, bipartisan spirit, of trying to do the right thing here. Thank you.
Other special orders? Representative Jewell, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request the floor to speak on humility, patience, and energy.
Humility, patience, and energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. From St. Lawrence Island to Barrow, spring is really around that coastline. And you can tell because from St. Lawrence to Barrow, whaling crews are out on the ice. And the reason that I picked humility, patience, and energy is people truly believe that you really don't get a whale, that it gives itself to you. And while the man of the crew, or excuse me, the man of the house is usually the captain of the crew, the success really is based on the actions of the wife. And during this time, people are waiting. There's not much you can do if the whales ain't running, except wait. Everybody stays busy to some extent, but you wait. You stay quiet. And you go through your mind time and time again. If it comes from this direction, how are you going to react? If you're in the boat, eight people moving like a machine, each connected to the person in front of them and behind them, and giving the meaning to teamwork. Energy, a sustenance in terms of food, in terms of spiritual energy, in terms of happiness energy, if a community is successful. It's also a time of sometimes danger. And so to those people who are out on the ice, I wish you well. Be safe. Be strong. A lot of people are depending on your success.
Representative Curtillo.
Clarity.
Clarity without objection.
I just want to point out to members that the chart that was criticized previously was from the Department of Revenue. Those are revenues figures. We got them from revenue. No one made them up, and that was the reason for the request that we have an updated chart. Thank you.
Any other special orders, Representative Ledoux?
Yes. Permission to speak on a small administrative matter?
A small administrative matter.
Yes. The sheet on 322 is floating around. If I could get it back, I'd appreciate it.
Is that your bill? Oh. Any other special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. Friday, April 28th.
That objection will be in adjournment until 10 a.m.